Welcome to Creatives Grab Coffee, the podcast on the business of video production.
Creatives Grab Coffee is hosted by Dario Nuri and Kirill Lazarov from Labs Productions. Our goal is to share knowledge and experiences from video production professionals around the world. Whether you're a freelancer looking to start your own business or a seasoned business owner aiming to scale your company, this is the show for you.
Join us as we develop a community of like-minded creatives looking to learn and help each other grow. Welcome to the business of video production. Welcome to Creatives Grab Coffee.
Before we get started with the show, let's go over today's sponsors.
Do you have a shoot in Toronto? Do you need crew or a strong production partner to help you with your project? Labs Productions is one of the top production companies in Toronto and your go-to video partner.
With our strong creative skills and extensive network, we can help you achieve your goal. Labs Productions is able to offer you production services, white label services, or finder fees for project handoffs.
Reach out to us on our website at lapsproductions.com to learn more.
My name is Miran. Welcome to Canada Film Equipment. We are a boutique rental house based in Toronto. We are here to help you guys out with all production sizes. Feel free to contact us to get a quote if you are a production house and you're looking for lighting, camera packages, or lighting and group van packages. You can see our contact information in the link below. We're more than happy to help you guys out. Make sure you follow and subscribe to creativesgrabcoffee.com. Thank you.
Hey, what's up, everybody? I'm Matt. Welcome to Audio Process. We are a boutique audio company doing location sound, sound design, post sound, ADR, Foley. We service equipment. We do all your audio needs here in Toronto. We got you covered. Come on down, audioprocess.ca. Don't forget to like, follow, subscribe, and all of the other internet things to creativesgrabcoffee.com. They'll be waiting for you. I'll be waiting for you. And we're all gonna have a real good time.
And now, let's begin the show.
Hey guys, welcome to another episode of Creatives Grab Coffee. And today we're finally coming back to Canada after 2 years. It's been 2 years since we've had a guest from Canada. And we're going to start it off with Anthony Madani from Up Media, who's based in Vancouver. Anthony, welcome to the show.
Hey, good to be here.
So let's start this off with a little history on how you got into the video production industry and how you started your company.
Yeah, so my background is actually in the animation industry. So I went to school to become an animator originally. However, when we were in animation school, the first year was actually technically a film school. So we had to learn how to use cameras, we had to shoot our own short film, we had to do a lot of very film-related stuff. So that kind of planted the seed for me just loving the video production side of things as well. Then I kind of got my feet wet in the animation industry, worked on a bunch of big projects, spent about 8 years doing that. But all the while on the side, I was like kind of, you know, playing with my camera, like filming projects, shooting music videos. Once in a while, I got a, you know, a couple of weddings. And I was like, man, I love animation, but I also really love film as well. And was just kind of like jumping back and forth. And at one point, you know, I just started getting enough requests for film work in that I was like, well, maybe I should just start a company that specializes in video and offer animation. And that was kind of the inception, and that was 2013, so that was over a decade ago.
That's pretty much when we got into video.
Yeah,
like what month specifically? Maybe it was the same month.
The same month, same day.
I think it was like April, it was spring or something like that.
You started earlier. I started September 2013. Dario joined in January 2014. So technically, he's not of the 2013 era.
Okay. Yeah, but I had experience with cameras back then. Yeah. There was that YouTube channel we did stuff for.
But, you know, it definitely makes sense that you went the route that you did, because you're starting to see what opportunities there are. And especially when you're starting out your career, you have to try whatever is coming your way, because you don't know anything yet, especially us who are just jumping into the industry. If you don't go to film school or anything, and even if you go to film school, you don't know what this industry is like. You need to wet your beak a little bit in different areas and kind of see what works, what sticks for you, because you never know otherwise. I mean, like, you tried animation first, and then all of a sudden opportunities in video start rolling through. From that, you could at least start building a foundational business and still do animation work, right?
Yeah, and I was really lucky. I just got to dabble in it for a while I had like another source of income, and just play around and see what I liked, you know? And yeah, it was really funny. Like, I really wanted to start a music video business where I just did music videos. But what I found, that I really struggled with the idea of using that as a side income or a main income, because I was just working with a lot of starving artists. And, you know, I was like, I was always just haggling and haggling, trying to, you know, get paid to do this music video, when at the same time I might, you know, talk to a small business and be like, yeah, I've got a budget, like, let's do it. And I'm like, oh, okay, great. So I kind of just transitioned that way. Like, obviously music videos are super fun and they're artistic and they're creative. I can still do them, but I'd almost do them more for fun now as a passion project, whereas like corporate video, you know, pays the bills. So yeah.
Are you trying to say you couldn't pay your rent in pizza?
And fist bumps.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, no, music videos are a creative endeavor, and you if you're gonna do them, you got to do it with the expectation is you're not gonna make a lot of money. You're going to get to try new things, use it like a creative experiment kind of area, right? That's the best way to do it. Really, the only place where there is a way to kind of start building like decent funding or money is usually like in the corporate and kind of promotional video route. That's where like people are ready to spend money.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That's where there's a lot of activity and a lot of need and a lot of corporate companies that, you know, frankly, they have a budget. So, you know, if you go there, you can thrive.
What kind of like corporate videos were you starting out with typically, like, or at least businesses, were you doing more in like the finance sector, or was it kind of like small businesses you were doing mostly those types of projects?
Yeah. When I started, I would do a video for anybody. Like, I had no niche. I had no particular area. It was just anyone that needed a video. I'd be like, yeah, I can do it. So I did everything from like, you know, dentists to yoga teachers to, you name it, like, and all kind of weird stuff, like anything that I could, you know, that would pay anyone that at the beginning that would pay me to do a video, I would do a video, as long as it was, you know, a tasteful business, right? But there was no niche at all. And so niche is something that I've really had to learn to develop. But at the beginning, it's just like anything. And you kind of, it's not a bad strategy in the beginning, because you kind of want to try different things. Like, maybe you enjoy shooting for restaurants more, or maybe you enjoy shooting real estate more. Like, you just don't know. Like you said, like, you got to try it out and see what your preference is.
And what about now? Have you niched down into a specific industry?
Yeah, so now I work very specifically with a lot of healthcare. That's sort of the main industry that we've done a lot of work for. But outside of that, we also work with, like, well, tech healthcare. And outside of that, like, tech companies. So agricultural technology, tech startups. Basically, like, our favorite type of client and niche is really like technology-based companies. Those companies are doing really innovative work. They have a need for a good video to help tell their story, and it's just a really fun and constantly evolving industry to be working in.
And like, have you? Are you still open to different industries approaching you, or do you specifically just focus on healthcare and tech?
Yeah, like, we don't shut the door if someone comes to us and wants to do that kind of work. It's just that we position ourselves now as experts in that category. And that's the beauty of it. Like, if someone came to me and they're like, hey, we want to do, I don't know, like, say they were like a yoga teacher. I'll go back to that example. Like, we can still do it. Doesn't mean we don't know how to make a great video, or a fitness trainer or something like that. It's just, you know, we have a lot of clients that we can work with that are focused in other areas.
Yeah. And one thing I'm learning lately is that you can niche in very interesting ways. Even like, I was actually just speaking with a director friend of mine this morning, and he was saying, like, one mutual company that we had worked for together in the past, they had started focusing just on nuclear based energy companies, and that is like something that they're starting to niche down. Doesn't mean that they won't do other types of projects, like you said, but I think more and more production companies are starting to recognize that there is a certain kind of client that they tend to gravitate more towards, and that's kind of like the work that they thrive in. So it makes it easier to market yourself and position yourself to those types of leads and clients and then kind of push that. I mean, there's always going to be people in different industries or different companies that might need video and, you know, they're shopping around and trying their hand with different companies, but picking a focus can help you kind of have like a little bit of a North Star as a business and, you know, be a little bit easier in terms of like how to pitch to certain clients, because you also know their business a bit better by doing so much work with them, right?
Yeah. And one of the things I find a lot is if we are working with a potential client, what they always ask to see is like, hey, have you done a video similar to what I'm looking for? Which is kind of a funny question, because if I haven't done, you know, a hydrogen fuel cell video, doesn't mean we can't make one, right? Like, we still know framing, we still know storytelling, we still know how to shoot. Like, it's all going to require the same elements, right? It's like, if I've never made a chocolate cake, but I've made tons of different other kind of cakes, it's just a couple of adjustments of ingredients, right? So yeah, we could totally do that. But you know, it really helps when someone comes to you and says, hey, have you made a hydrogen fuel cell video? And we go, yeah, we actually have, check it out. Then that's like almost a surefire bet that you're going to land that gig, right?
Yeah, that's always something we struggle with, because sometimes we do have people coming in from an industry where you haven't worked with yet, but that, you know, I mean, we're generalists. We can do whatever we put our mind to, right? But sometimes they're looking for like an exact replica of that video.
Yeah.
And I find that the best approach for us is kind of like explaining in our case studies that we can create something similar. It'll be like in this style, but also letting them know that if they want an outside person's perspective on that type of content, we can offer that to them, right? How have you like navigated that type of conversation?
Sorry, before we kind of go into that, that just reminded me on one thing, because there was actually, I remember one lead was asking us for a particular video in their industry, and we had done the exact same kind of video, just instead of for that kind of tech sector, it was like a finance sector one, but they were very particular about wanting that exact replica, like, which was, like, do you find that happens every now and then as well, Anthony, or is it like just, you just have to explain it and it should be fine?
Yeah, it definitely happens. I think a lot of people go into looking at a video company thinking like, hey, have you done the video that I want to do? Which, it's not the best mindset for those clients to be in, because you don't want to necessarily copy someone. I always try to advise that you want to come up with an original video. You want to come up with something that's not been done before. You don't want to do something that's totally experimental, right? Like, but you just don't want to copy your competitor, right? Like, how can you plus up, you know, the video that your competitor's done? So I think it's really critical that when you're in early stages of starting a video, whether you are the client or the video production company, is you have to have a conversation about the strategy. Hey, like, why do you even want to make this video? Like, say you want a testimonial video. Okay, why do you want a testimonial video? Oh, we just, you know, saw a competitor. Okay, but do you know why they chose it? No, you don't. Right? So what do you need, really? Like, what's the bottleneck in your business? Let's create a video strategy based off what you really need. That's going to allow us to create a lot better video. And can we fulfill that? 100%. So I think as long as you have that conversation up front, you can navigate a lot better what type of video they actually need. And sometimes it's just respectfully challenging them on their mindset around what kind of video. Now, if they have done research, they have a big marketing company, they're like, no, we really know that we need a testimonial video because it's like a bottom of funnel video that we're looking for. Okay, great. You've done a significant amount of research. Now let's talk about the testimonial video. Can we do those? Yeah, we've done tons of testimonial videos. Here's an example. So I think what it comes down to is just how I navigate it and how I recommend other video companies navigate that. And even clients looking to get a video is like, you got to really think about what video do you need versus what video do you want.
When you started niching into tech and healthcare, was that like an organic process, or did you actively try to focus on those two industries?
It was a totally organic process. I think it's just we were in a phase where we were evolving out of just doing work for everybody, and we were kind of getting more consistent clients. And I think when we looked at our roster of clients, we realized, oh yeah, we've got a lot of companies that are kind of focused on healthcare, or at least some type of initiatives that are good for the planet. That might be social impact, social enterprise, or even environmental impact. So it just sort of spawned out of us doing a lot of different work and naturally recognizing that our portfolio was kind of forming itself. A big side of that, though, was that we became a certified B Corporation. And if you don't know what that is, it stands for Benefit Corporation. So it's basically a certification that looks at a whole bunch of different facets of how you run your business and certifies that your business is a good business for the planet. So it makes a positive impact on the planet. And there's a multitude of different ways that every different type of business can do that. But when we looked at the B Corp certification requirements, we realized that we were doing a lot of that stuff anyway. Like, a lot of the stories that we were telling were for brands that were making a really positive impact on the planet. And so we're like, well, let's just certify, because we're kind of already walking that path. And then when we got certified, we just decided to use that as momentum and say, like, hey, let's approach other brands that are also doing good for the planet, whether it's environmental or healthcare or what have you, and just say, hey, we're certified as a B Corp now. We can help you better than the next company.
We've had a guest bring that up last season, Eric Croswell from Bridge City Media. He's also a B certified company based out of Portland, Oregon. That seems to be like a West Coast thing. Like, I was just thinking it's a West Coast thing in the middle of North America or on the East Coast. It's like strictly like West Coast stuff.
Yeah, and you're definitely the first Canadian company that we've come across. That
I thought it was an American thing. Company. I thought it was an American thing. I didn't even know they offered that in Canada.
Yeah, it's grown international now. So you're seeing B Corps get certified all over the planet. But I will say that we are one of the first video production companies in BC that are certified. We're not the first, but we're like new on the scene for sure for doing that.
Is it like very common over there, or is it still kind of like niche in a way?
Well, as far as video production companies, yeah, and marketing companies, it's still quite new, but there's a lot of B Corps in Vancouver, BC, and in BC. There's a ton of them, and there's more and more growing every day.
I guess for people that haven't heard the previous episode, like, in terms of, can you just explain, like, in terms of like the process, and was it like a quick and easy thing, or did it take a while? Was it really expensive? Or
yeah, so it's not a quick and easy thing. If you're looking for a quick certification to slap on your website, this is not going to be it. They do their due diligence on you, and it took us a year to get certified. So there's a lot of process. They basically, how it works is that you go online and fill out an assessment, which is a very in-depth assessment, and they look at things like how you govern your company. They look at your social impact, your environmental impact. They look at all these different things, and you don't have to excel in all of them. You don't even have to complete all of them, but every category that you can successfully fill out, you get a point. And so if you reach 80 points, then they will basically certify you. So it's done on a point system. So you just go in and talk about your business, you fill it out, and you just talk about what's the impact that you're having on the planet, and you start racking up points. If you get to 80 points, then they'll basically have an interview to look at certifying you. The cost is actually very interesting. It's not the same cost for everybody. They actually look at your annual revenue and give you a percentage of cost based on how much you make. So you have to understand that there's like financial institutions that are getting B Corp certified. They're not paying the same as a small video business, for example, or a marketing company. So it's very, very democratic in how they do it. And it's very fair the way that they do it.
And you have to do it every year?
No, when you get certified, your certification lasts for 3 years.
That's what I was going to say,
and then
say,
you have
to
recertify after 3 years. Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that was one thing that that we realized that could be like a deterrence for some companies, where they would have to keep getting recertified constantly every few years, because it is something that takes time, and it is something you have to very actively keep maintaining to keep you true to being B Corp certified, right? It's not like one of those things where you buy it, you pay once, that's it, and then you could just start slacking off as a business. I think that's not the whole point of it. The whole point is to try to keep the business, you know, with those initiatives going, right? Accountability.
I think that it's not as much work to maintain as it might seem. You will get certified if you're already living these principles. You don't have to pivot your whole company to get certified, and why would you, right? We decided to go for the certification because we're like, yeah, we're basically, in our hearts, we're already certified. Like, we're just naturally trying to create work and trying to do business in a way that's beneficial to people, planet, and profit, right? So if you are of that nature in your company, then you're not going to have to do a whole bunch of grunt work to try to certify. Most likely you're already more than halfway there, and they're just assessing and validating, you know, what you're doing. So for us, like, we don't have to worry. Now, the standards are evolving and they are changing, especially with the advent of like AI and like so much change in the political landscape and business and all that kind of stuff. So things are going to change, but if you're just true to who you are, then you don't really have to change from year to year.
And one thing I'm wondering about is, like, you know, you said giving back to the environment, people, profit, all that stuff. Like, can you give us some examples of, like, because I'm trying to think about it from like the production company point of view, like, what are some of the things they would be looking for? I mean, obviously there's something like living wage would be an example, but what else? Like, maybe volunteering or doing some pro bono work? Is that it?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think, again, the way that the B Corp certifies is they really let you tell the story of how you want to get certified. So for us, one of the things that helped us get our certification was putting people of color on camera as much as possible, right? So really trying to diversify ethnicities on camera and not stick to old standards of film. So that was one thing that they really thought that, you know, we did well. Another thing, this is kind of minor, but just another, gave us another couple of points here, was just like using rechargeable batteries, right? Like, not just tossing out batteries all the time. Like, we're really big on our environmental impact. Like, how can we do that? So, you know, we, you know, are mostly a digital company. We reuse reusable batteries whenever we can. You know, we try to minimize things like flying, because this is something that I had to learn when I was in the process of getting certified, was like how destructive to the planet flying actually is, right? And I'm not trying to shame anyone for flying or taking a vacation, but it's like, you know, if we have a shoot, so we're in Vancouver, let's say we have a shoot in Montreal, instead of me flying out to Montreal to shoot, why don't I just contact a shooter in Montreal and collaborate that way, right? And so these are things that just help save on, you know, carbon and emissions and stuff like that. So again, it's really up to you to create the pitch, and just say like, hey, these are the initiatives that we're doing. How do these factor into the certification?
I think we're basically there then. I'm going to look into applying, because, yeah, through this podcast, whenever we have a shoot in another city, we just use the podcast network to just get it done, because
yeah.
I'm not a big fan of taking flights, especially for work. So. Yeah. And I guess now on that application, I'll put to save the environment as well. But
exactly. There you go. And that's, I think that's a great way to look at certification, is like, hey, just if you just are of that mindset, is like, how can we do business in a way that's beneficial to the planet? You're going to be halfway there, more than halfway there.
Well, now that you've gotten the B Corp certification, have you seen that be a part of the conversation with any new leads or current clients that you might have? Like, is it something that they would mention on their own, or is it that they would notice, you know, it's like, hey, we saw that you're doing this and we resonate with it, so we wanted to reach out to you. Do you have any of those scenarios, or is it more you're actively reaching out to certain companies being like, hey, we got this, we would love to work with you? How has that been like post getting the certification?
Yeah, so it's a big mixture of both. Like, first of all, I'll say that B Corp is still a relatively new thing in the world, so it hasn't really reached its peak as far as brand recognition yet. Although that said, it's really growing quite quickly and gaining a lot of traction. I think there are probably a mix, like, just to roughly say, like, 50% of the companies that look at hiring us do know what a B Corp certification is. And again, going back to the fact that because we work with healthcare brands, environmental brands, social impact brands, a lot of them are already in the know about what a B Corp is. So in that regard, it does help us close those deals. And that was honestly a big part of why we did it, is because we wanted that extra certification. We wanted that extra brand recognition that we're not just a video company, we're like certified by a third party. So when we work with brands that are focused on good for the planet themselves, yeah, they definitely look highly upon the B Corp certification. If we do have clients that maybe aren't necessarily, that's not their mandate or part of their brand, there's a little bit of education happening that we need to say, hey, like, you know, we're B Corp. Do you know what a B Corp is? No, what is it? And then we talk to them about it, and then that's really good for them. So.
Well, one thing I'm wondering is, I want to take it back to niches a little bit, because you're focusing on two industries, tech and healthcare, but they're both pretty big industries. So I'm wondering, like, when you do outreach, like, how do you kind of narrow your focus on the types of companies you want to collaborate with? I know you mentioned B Corp, but it's still like a young thing, and I think you mentioned like 50% of them might not know what it is, so you still have to do some education. So how do you still like narrow down your focus on what kind of leads you want to target?
So we really like to focus, like narrow our focus based on, again, I hate to say this, but it's like past work that we've done. If we can really show a good case study, then we're going to lead with a case study, right? And even if we're going to go after a company that we don't necessarily have a completely identical case study for, we might go have a similar case study to say, hey, we did like a testimonial video and it was a lot of success and it looked really good and this is how it came across. So yeah, I think case studies are really, really strong selling points. I think at the end of the day, like, we're doing art, right? And art is subjective. So it's hard for us to say like, hey, we're going to make a super creative video. At the end of the day, like, our clients, they don't value creativity as much as they value the results, right? Creativity is just the means to an end. So you have to lead with the fact that you can get results. And so one of the things that we do at UpMedia is that we're just, you know, we're a really strong and solid company, but we're really big on showing what we've done. Like, we've won several awards. We have a lot of recognition. We have different certifications. So we just lead with that. We say, by the way, before we even get into like what kind of video we're going to do for you, here's the success that we've had. And I think that that's one of the ways that we can lead and we can start with a really strong approach to some of these clients.
Then I guess, you mentioned something that I wanted to explore a bit, which was case studies, right? I'm just curious, like, with our case studies, I'll usually just include like some technical details about the project, you know, like how long it took, what the ask was, how long, and then, you know, the goal, all that stuff, maybe a budget range and whatnot. I'm curious, like, what do you include in your case studies?
Yeah, it's very similar. In our case studies, you know, we involve details about the project, what went into it, how we strive to meet the client's goal. I think that in and of itself can be a really solid case study. At the end of the day, you know, clients just want to know that you can do the job right, right? They want to know that you can do the job well. If you hire someone to build your house or something, they want to know that you can build a house that's not going to fall over. It's the same thing, right? So your case studies don't need to say, hey, we 10x'd your sales and all this stuff. Like, I think if you've had that kind of success and you can demonstrate a good ROI, that's important, but it's not critical. What's critical is to show that you can achieve the goal that the client is looking for.
And especially in timelines, I've noticed whenever we are showing case studies, the biggest question typically our clients or leads ask is, how long will it take to put it together? And then that way you can kind of break it down by each phase of the process. Like, pre-production could maybe take 1 to 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks. Production will be 1 to 2 days, 2 to 3 days, whatever it might be. And then post-production, again, you can then communicate that. That way, before you start, you give them a very good estimate on what the timeline is going to be so that they can make plans in their marketing calendar for like when the video will be ready, when they could start pushing ads, or when they could start using it, right?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Clients want to know that you can meet the deadline. Ultimately, again, it comes back to they want to know that you can do the job right, right?
Yeah.
So when you're pitching to a client, what's your story that you're telling them? What's your success story that you're telling them about yourself, right? Like, and we try to incorporate that into our pitch. And so one of the things that we do is, you know, we just have a very well fleshed out proposal. Right. So which we don't send until we're really, really clear on what the client wants, what they need, what their budget is, finding all that, and then tailor fitting a proposal. We like to go above and beyond on that, because a lot of people will just send a quote in an email, just a couple numbers in an email. We don't do that. We're going to sit down and we're going to go through like a whole presentation deck that says, hey, here's how we got started. Here's the stages of production. Like you were saying, this is what's involved in pre-production. This is what's involved in production. This is what's involved in post-production. And we outline like, hey, these are all the things that we're gonna do for you. And then we talk about our success cases and we show examples and it's just testimonials. So it's really, we're painting this huge, beautiful picture about how we're gonna go to bat for you. And we're gonna like, you know, this is like a Hollywood level production that we're gonna do for you for your 30-second video, right? Like, we just try to really prove to them that we are, without question, the best person that they can go to. And we just find that's really helpful at the end of the day.
Do you find though that sometimes, because it sounds like you really want to get as much information as possible before you present your proposal, but I've personally found sometimes you got to be like quick and like quickly send it to them, because you know they might just go with someone else. So have you found yourself kind of like just cutting back a little bit and just sending it earlier just to make sure you might close up? No, you stuck to your guns then, huh?
Yeah, you know, I'm not gonna let a client tell me how to do my job, right? I'm not gonna let them dictate our quality. So part of us doing great quality video, or part of us doing a great quality proposal, is how we're gonna do the video. So if they want you to just rush the quote out, you might as well say, hey, just rush the video out. But they don't want us to rush the video out, right? They want us to take our time and do a really good quote. Of course, they don't want it to take forever, but you know, what I'm trying to say is like the proposal process is us showing them how much effort and time and care we're going to put into the project, even at the proposal stage. So if they want us to rush that, just the answer is no. You know, we're going to take our time. Now, we're not going to, you know, a proposal review is only like 20 minutes. It's not that long. It's not hours and hours and hours, but it's like if they just say, hey, can you just hurry up? The answer is no, because we want to do a great job and we want to show you. And if you don't want a high quality company to pitch, then we're not for you.
So in a way, like you're not, just to kind of clarify for the audience, then it's like when you're saying you're taking your time, it doesn't mean that you're going to spend like a week on an initial proposal or something like that. You might spend like a day or half a day, like just to kind of like really think about it, talk to your team and see what realistically you can do. It's like, which honestly is a reasonable approach, and most leads will do that. It's pretty rare where they will be like, I need this quote in the next 10 minutes, you know?
That's not what I meant. I meant more so like, because I've never had a lead brush me for it, but I know that they're talking to other people at the same time, right? So I try to make sure I'm as fast, I try to make sure I get it to them as fast as possible, because from my experience, I've noticed that whoever gets their foot in the door first, or if you're part of that, you know, 2 to 3 people, like they'll probably just look at that. If not, whoever else comes in later, they might have already made a decision, right? So I'm just wondering if like you kind of factor that into your process, right?
I think you're both bringing up really good points. Like, you don't want to take too long. You don't want to come back to them a week later. Yeah, you're going to miss the boat. But it doesn't take a long time. Let me make sure that's clear. For the client, it feels like a fast turnaround. Like, we can get that proposal over to you in the same week that the request for video came in. If they request on a Monday, by like Wednesday, you should be ready to go. It doesn't takes, you know, maybe a couple hours to talk it over with your team, write the proposal. And what really helps is to actually like create a templated proposal so that you just go in and plug in the numbers, tailor fit a couple of pages. Shouldn't take that long. But it should look to the client like, wow, you spent all week on this. But really, you only spent an hour on it. But so that's the first thing. Second thing, Dario, to your point, you know, if the client is coming to you and they're in a rush for video, that we just don't really attract those kind of clients that often. It's just the quality of lead, right? Like, if if you're dealing with someone that's just like, hey, I just need this video right now, like, don't even bother.
No. That's not what I'm saying. There's no indication that they're on a rush. I just assume that they're going to look at the first three people, and, you know, if you give it to them like a couple of days later, they might have already like chosen their person, right? So I try to like do it either sometimes same day or like next morning type of thing, just to make sure.
It's like, yeah, make it a priority. That's essentially how it should be. Like, when you get a lead in, you should treat that as like a potential new business that can come in within like a day. So like, I think a good average rule of thumb is to try to get it done for the next day at the very least, so that you can at least kind of keep things going. Cause as more and more leads start coming through, you can start kind of seeing what sticks with other ones. And like you said, when you have like a templated kind of initial proposal, you know, like with your processes, who you are as a business, some general case studies for all the projects you've done, you can easily start plugging in exactly, you know, like a really good proposal once you've talked to your team that seems tailor-made to the client. I mean, it is tailor-made, you know, obviously you change a couple things, you adjust the estimate, you adjust like what the asks are, the whys, the what's, the how's, you that's the stuff that usually takes the most amount of time. And then picking out the right case studies. Like, for example, we have a case study pre-made for every single project that we have ever done that we know is like in terms of like a variety. So they're always ready to go. Like, I remember we first did that a few years ago, and Dario and I sat down and just made them all, made sure that we had all the information that we needed. So sometimes, like, if any time Dario has like a quick proposal that needs to be made, he just knows exactly where those case studies are, for what industry it was, for what type of video it was. He just grabs them and then puts them in, and that saves hours, right? Just to have assets like that already pre-made.
I love that. So what do you guys put in your case studies?
Ours are very simple at the moment. I actually wanted to rework them. That's why I asked you about the the case studies. Ours just have basically what the client asked was, what we delivered, the timeline we delivered it in. We used to have like a budget range, but I noticed that that might cause some issues, especially when you're quoting on a project, so I removed that. And then we have obviously the video examples, and then I also have a section that talks about like what elements of this we're going to be incorporating into their video, because sometimes it's not like you mentioned, like it's like same industry but different type of client. So I figure that because sometimes they're not creative, they might not understand why I'm showing them this one. So I'll say, we're going to grab this element from this video, and it'll be part of this part of your video. And that's it. They're very simple. I try to keep them on one page. But I think one cool thing we could probably start doing, Kirill, is including a secondary page where we can have like BTS pictures from the project, and maybe even like a BTS video. That could also be really cool.
Yeah, like it all depends on what assets you have available for all those different projects, and you're always trying to figure out different ways to kind of showcase and like a little bit of a peek behind the scenes, and definitely incorporating some behind the scenes is a good way to kind of do that.
We started doing, sorry, go ahead, Kirill, I'll say it after.
You want to try to show as much transparency and like a little bit of the behind the scenes. You show what the project was, you know, like I think, Dario, that's a good point. Like showing like some behind the scenes specific to those projects can give at least like a bit of a comfort of like what might be involved, what kind of people, how involved people will be. Because sometimes clients might also think they see a video, they don't know what goes into
what went on behind it.
A video. Yeah. There's like, oh yeah, that should take like 2 seconds. But then when they see the behind the scenes and sees like all the lighting, all the setup, all the crew, it's like, oh, okay, so that's not something that
that's
can just
what
cost
I'm paying
like
for.
That's what I'm paying for. It's not just the video, it's like there's a lot of resources and manpower that go into these projects, and it's a good idea to
another
to
thing incorporate. We're one thing we started doing this year is every project we do, we're trying to grab BTS content of, and I'm not just talking about like pictures, like we actually grab like BTS video, and the way we've done it is with the DJI Pocket 3. It's so awesome for that type of stuff. And we want to, like, my goal is to have like one BTS video per project that we do this year. And actually, I saw Ryan Spanger's video on LinkedIn earlier today, and I really liked how he also talks in front of the camera about what the project is while they're on set doing it. And then,
awesome.
Yeah, and then he also has his client talk about it, and I was like, oh, that's great. So going forward, yeah. Kirill, we got to start incorporating that too.
I've been wanting to do something like that at one point. The only problem when we have that is like if you start to focus a lot on also the BTS, you need someone that kind of takes lead on that, because it's its own video that you're also doing, right? Like if you're having the main the director, the DP, and the main shooters who are like or crew that are focusing on actually delivering the video for the client, it's going to be hard to focus on also trying to capture the behind the scenes element. You almost need like someone who's just there that's just focusing on that part of it, you know, because then it's
it's such good deliverable. Market it's such good marketing content that I feel like
that's what I'm saying, we need to get another person that can focus on that is what I'm saying.
That's a great place to get an intern, right?
That's yeah what I was gonna someone, yeah like a yeah. PA can do it,
right? Like that's someone that just wants to get better at video or photography or whatever, like this is a perfect place for them to just go shoot and play around
yeah
and get better. So intern for that one for sure.
And you know what I noticed he did, Ryan? What he did was he, his episode is great, by the way. For those listening, it's the Dream Engine episode. So make sure you go check that out. One thing he did, I think for the shots where he was talking to the camera, I could be wrong, but I think it's basically the setup they were going to use for the talent. They just went in front and just spoke to the camera. I think that's how I would have done it.
That's awesome.
So it doesn't really take up too much time because you're basically just hopping in for a second, grabbing some content. That's it.
Yeah.
If you can find time in the schedule, or like if you do it at lunch or something, like something really quick.
Yeah.
You know, like in between the actual filming that you've like budget, because you also want to be respectful for the client. You also don't want to eat up like the time that they're paying for. So like there's a little things like that you need to consider. So finding like either like at the end of the shoot or like during a break or something like that is usually good, or when you're setting up. I've seen a lot of BTS content where people kind of like do a little talking points like when they're setting up shots typically, and then it's like a little bit more raw kind of approach.
There's always time. I feel like you could always find like 5 minutes, right?
Yeah like as long as you're being respectful is all I'm saying for the client, because you also just don't want to take up too much of their time, right?
It's great content for them too, because when you post it, like you can tag the client in it, and
yeah,
they can see themselves also. Like it's great content for them.
I think, you know, at the end of the day, we're storytellers, so we got to remember to tell our own story too.
Yeah, that's one of our goals this year, is to try to do a little bit more of that. Like we're starting small right now. We just wrapped up like a second mini BTS video, but kind of like just doing little short ones that are just under 60 seconds, just to showcase a little bit of like what the behind the scenes shots look like, and then with their actual and what the actual shot looks like behind the scenes there. And it they're nice little clips that we can that is easy to do, and you can share across all your platforms. So we're just starting off small like that, getting into the habit of it, and then we can start incorporating more elements into it.
Yeah, and I find that you gotta, with stuff like this, you gotta do it consistently and often, because that's the only way you'll really get better at it. Like I noticed with this podcast, this year we started doing like a lot of episodes. You guys like listening have no, you guys listening have no idea how I have like 10 episodes stocked up I gotta go through and whatnot. I noticed like posting every day, like I've started to notice like, oh, okay, better ways of going about posting. And that wouldn't have happened if I was doing it like once a week or once every 2 weeks. It's only after I start doing it consistently that I noticed better ways to become more efficient and effective. So I guess it's going to be the same thing with this stuff, right?
Yeah, we're slowly testing it out now, and then we'll start posting more and more. And then once you start doing more and more projects, you start getting more BTS content, then you have more stuff to work with, right? Nice. Actually, Anthony, do you do any kind of like other promotions that you do, like aside from like just directly with the clients, like any kind of like in terms of like networking and active outreach? Because that's another thing a lot of companies are trying to figure out, production companies, is how do you go out and try to like drum up new business aside from just what comes in, right?
Yeah, that is the million-dollar question, is how do you get new leads? What's the most effective way to go about it? You know, all video, most video production companies are really looking for, you know, how they can grow their leads. And that's, you know, sales solves every problem in your business. So, you know, you got to keep that funnel full. I think one of the things that we've done over the years is we do networking. We've had times where we do like networking in person, on and off. I haven't done that as much in recent years, but just kind of getting back into that again, personal networking, showing up in person once in a while is good. Another big one is social media. So I think it's good as a business, as a video production company, to be on social media and use it to attract clients. So if you're B2C, Facebook and Instagram is probably the best place for you to be, because that's where your new client prospects are going to be. If you're B2B, then LinkedIn is where you want to be, because that's where you're going to be meeting marketing managers and owners and founders and that kind of thing. So we do a lot on LinkedIn, and that's another place to network, even though it's more digital. Those are kind of the two main funnels. And yeah.
Nice. So have you, you said like now you're kind of jumping back into networking a little bit more and doing more stuff in person. Do you kind of look for different networking events or different kind of industry events based on your two niches? Like, do you look for like healthcare and tech, organizations that like run monthly or quarterly events that you can attend and like make connections with?
Yeah, definitely. I think you want to be mindful about where you're going if you want to do networking and try to meet business owners that are in the niche that you want to work with. So for us, yeah, definitely going to like tech meetups are really fun. Can meet a lot of interesting people there. Digital marketing meetups, you know, which is great because we work with a lot of tech companies and people in the internet space. For us, because we're a B Corp, we go to B Corp networking as well. Most B Corps now will have, or sorry, most major cities will have a B Corp, a local. It's called B Local. I don't know, you know, what cities people are tuning in from, but like for us in Vancouver, there's a lot of, you know, there's events for B Corps and people who are kind of similar to B Corps or into like environmentally sustainable businesses. Those kind of things are where you will thrive if that's what you're focused on.
Talking about networking, are you a good, like, what it seems like you might be good at networking, so I'm just curious, what tips do you have for people to start doing that, and maybe like tips on like types of conversations you can start?
Okay, so big networking tip is don't go there and try to sell your video, okay, because it's just not going to work very well, and you're just going to come off the wrong way, and it probably makes you feel uncomfortable doing it. So go there knowing who you want to meet, and go there with an intention of like, hey, I want to meet this person. And that's just a way better pitch, because then when you meet people, you go, hey, do you know anybody that happens to work in marketing in the healthcare space? I'm looking to connect with like-minded people in that industry. You know, do you know anyone that works in the athletic or health tech space? I'm trying to like meet people like that. If you go in there with an agenda of, hey, I want to meet these type of people, it's a way easier approach to go with than like, hey, I'm looking for people to buy my video. You know, that way people who maybe aren't looking to get a video right now, or maybe are your ideal clients, they can now rally to help you, because they're like, oh, I actually have a cousin that works in the healthcare space, or I have a colleague that works in the healthcare space, or my wife works in healthcare space. So then they can like, you know, set up connection. They can work with you instead of being like, hey, you know, are you looking for a video? No. Okay, bye. Right? It's just so so basic. So you want to try to really focus on what's the intention, like who do you want to meet? And in order to do that, you have to really know who's your ideal client and who's your ideal industry. And then you can go to a network event and you can walk away with like 10 or 15 people who might give you the referrals that you're looking for.
Yeah. And it's like shooting darts at a dartboard if you're trying to get a sale at a networking event, typically, because yeah. It's very rare that, maybe not rare, but it's more often unlikely that you're going to find someone that needs a video right at that second or within the next coming week. And only looking for those types of connections, you're kind of wasting your time a little bit in the potential of what can happen, of like who you can talk to. And you put it brilliantly, where finding the right kind of people in the industry or the types of companies that you're trying to target at least can help, you know, make introductions and like and be on the radar for people, because sometimes that's where you want to be. You just want to be on people's radar. And then once you make a LinkedIn connection, if you're really good with your LinkedIn marketing and posting constantly, then you can be more top of mind for those people over time. And then say 2 months, 3 months, 4 months down the road, they see you're very active. They see you're working really well through your LinkedIn posts. And then it's like, yeah, we actually finally need a video. You know, I'm glad that we met. Let's chat more. I find trying to go from a more genuinely curious and non-selling perspective helps foster better connections over time, over the long term.
Yeah, so I totally agree with that. Another big tip for networking is like, go there to create reciprocity. Go there to just be of service. Like, who can I help, right? Like, just go there and help people out. If you do that, people are gonna like you and you're gonna create reciprocity in that they're gonna want to work together with you because you didn't try to sell them a video right away. You know, you were of service to them. If they know someone, they're going to be more likely to want to be of service to you. So you have to really think long term when you're doing networking. It's like, just build relationships, create friendships, and build reciprocity. And that is going to turn around. Might be like 6 months from now, might be 3 months from now, might be a year from now. But it would be worth it if you ended up getting a sale out of that because you just went in to help someone.
What do you mean by reciprocity? Like doing pro bono stuff for like the people you meet, or?
What I mean by reciprocity is like, just go in wanting to help people, right? Like, don't go in there trying to take, go in there trying to give. So however you do that is up to you. It doesn't have to be like, hey, I'm gonna go give you everyone a free video. That's not what I mean. I just mean like, go in there with a serving mentality and a helpful mentality. By doing that, you will automatically create reciprocity, and people are going to look at you as someone that's helpful and they're going to want to help you back.
Yeah. One good example of that during like the height of the pandemic, like one of the big things a lot of people needed to do was obviously do these types of like video calls. You know, like that's where everyone was meeting at that point. Right. And one of the biggest challenges a lot of people had was that they only had their laptops. They didn't have good mics. They didn't have good lighting or anything like that. So anytime I went into networking and I was chatting with people, I was always trying to give just little tips people can do to kind of like bring the production quality of their video calls up a little bit, right? I tell them like, you know, if you don't have any money, here are some little things you can do to kind of like improve it, you know, that maybe you might not know, you know, something that we've done through experience. If you want to kind of elevate yourself a little bit where you get a slightly better microphone or something like that, I would send them links to things that can help them. And people responded very well to that. So there's definitely something to be said about like at least trying to help them in some way, like give suggestions or tips, or if they have questions about video that they're like thinking about, you know, try to be helpful, not selling, right?
Yeah, I still do that to this day at a networking event. Like, you know, it might not be how to have better lighting on Zoom or necessarily or whatever, but like, how can I help you? If you're going to try to shoot your own video, instead of me coming and being like, no, hire me, I'm going to come up to you and be like, what help do you need? Like, what camera are you using? Like, you know, let me help, right? Because here's what's going to happen is they're going to appreciate that. They're going to feel empowered by that. And one of two things might happen. One, they might shoot their video and be like, oh, this is terrible. I need to hire someone. I'm going to hire the person that was willing to help me. Or B, if someone comes along in their network and goes, hey, I really need a video expert. Oh, this guy helped me out with my lighting and get a better camera. Talk to him. Right? So yeah, just again, that's what I'm saying about reciprocity is go in, be willing to help, give free tips, advice. You don't have to give a free video, but like give free tips. Be willing to help people who aren't ready yet to buy your services. And you'll see, like you can have some really cool stuff can come out of that.
Like being a problem solver, essentially. Immediately, that's what you become in that person's mind is you're a problem solver. However small, it can go such a long way. So it's like it's almost like low effort for high reward kind of approach, right? But the right kind of effort, you know, in terms of what you're providing other people.
Yeah,
I like it. Let's talk about AI. Are you using that in your business? Like, what are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, so let's talk about AI. So AI right now is definitely growing and sort of taking over all areas of business. I believe it's going to be just absolutely critical in the future. I think right now, as far as AI in video, and probably for the next couple of years, AI is going to replace the bottom of the market. So the easiest to put out videos, that's what it's going to take over, right? And it's not a huge threat to us. I think that now would be a really good time for all video production companies to learn how to use AI video, take advantage of this AI revolution, and then include that in your offering. Because AI will get more sophisticated and it will start to take over more and more sections of the market. It's going to start from the bottom and work its way up. But it's always going to be best if it's got that human component and a person that can say, hey, like, you know, really customize the AI video to help specific brands. So I'm just starting to adopt it myself. I'm still in a very experimental stage where I'm finding that a lot of what I'm trying to create with AI video is just not that good quality. You know, it's kind of an equivalent of maybe replacing a lot of stock video. You know, like stock video, how much of your video that you put out includes stock video? Probably 10% or less, right? Whereas a lot of it, you need to get those custom interviews. You need to get that custom B-roll, right? So it's kind of an equivalent of stock video at this point. It's, you know, it will evolve and it will get better. But I think that is... if you truly, truly want to help your clients, let's leverage it. Let's not, you know, hate it and be afraid of it.
Yeah, I completely agree.
I like what you mentioned, though, how it's going to affect the low tier
bottom
videos?
The bottom tier
projects, which, you know, that classic saying now that people are the barriers to entry are almost like non-existent. You know, it's very easy for people to kind of jump into the industry, which... is still true, and AI kind of makes that even easier, but it almost makes it difficult on the other side because it's harder to stand out as a result. Because if it's almost like if everyone has a phone now, you know, it's like, okay, I have a phone now and I can talk to anyone anywhere, but it's like, oh, but I have a satellite phone that can help you talk to someone on the moon or whatever, right? Like I'm trying to kind of like just show where it's like, because now everyone can do that with AI and it's such an accessible tool, how is you going to enter the market and provide something different, at least in the lower tier kind of realm otherwise, right? So now it's almost like kind of like coming full circle where it's getting harder again to jump into the industry because of how easy it is.
Yeah, totally. Another thing about AI video is that AI video is always going to be an applied skill. It's a skill to create AI video, right? Doesn't matter how good video AI can create, you still need to know how to create good video and you still need to discern what is good AI video versus what is crap, right? And so...
That might get blurred in the future because now you got to be good at prompting, but it could get to the point within a couple of years where even with a basic prompt, it could kind of get very close to what you want, right? Versus now.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see, right? Time will tell. But I think the thing that we all have to be mindful of is that, you know, companies are not going to necessarily be able to replace video producers with AI because they would need to go and spend the time to learn how to prompt, to learn what's good storytelling, to learn what's strong visually, where to use wide shots, where to use close-up shots, where to use depth of field, you know, all of that kind of stuff. So I think that it's a long way to go, and I think that the skill is the thing we have to be cognizant of, is that to do good AI, and that's something that I'm discovering right now, it actually takes a lot of time and a lot of work. But at the same time, I think that it's going to allow a lot of us video creators to create really cool stuff that maybe we couldn't create before. So as long as we can spend the time to learn it and leverage it, we can actually supply really, really high quality AI video to our clients.
I think also with corporate, the thing is a lot, and you mentioned this before, a lot of the stuff we have to get, you mentioned how like stock footage is only like 10% of what footage we use, right? it's gonna be a similar thing with AI, because like we have to, a lot of times you have to go in and get those interviews. You can't really create an AI version of that person talking. It's not gonna be, I mean, there's gonna be legal complications for sure. So I think a lot of companies are just gonna flat out say, no, this has to be actually shot. And a lot of their machinery or whatever, their offices and stuff, you can't really replicate that with a program that doesn't know anything about that office, right? So it seems like it's just going to be a tool for us to create better and stronger videos, right? Like, for example, if you did an interview and then they they didn't say that word right. They had like a raspy voice at that specific moment, or they coughed, or they looked away. We could probably use AI to fix fumbles like that, right? Like it'll be useful in those situations, maybe even creating certain scenes, but for the most part, like they can't really get rid of us just yet. I think it's just going to be like the bottom tier of video people are just going to have a harder time.
And to add to that, when you think about it, a corporation or a company is not going to spend marketing dollars on a video and also like someone in their company to try to make AI video, you know, to save money on actually producing the video itself. Because if they're going to start putting money behind marketing this content, like they're going to want to also put it behind people that are experts and people that have track records, right? Like it's, they're not going to go to their marketing team and be like, can you figure out how to make an AI video? And then we can pump like $10,000-$15,000 into ad spend for it. You know, it's,
Some are going to try,
but it's not going to work in the long term, and it can be more expensive.
I think there's definitely a percentage that will do it for sure.
Yeah, and that's when they're going to find out that AI is not just like a magic genie that pumps you out an amazing video. They're going to do it and go like, oh, this sucks. How do all the good people do it? Right? And this is what I'm saying. Like, this is why AI is really a skill that you have to learn how to do it. And what I'm learning right now is like, good AI comes from good photography, right? Good film comes from good photography, right? That's why they're called like the director of photography. It's because you have to understand what makes good photography. And if someone is trying to create AI video and they don't know that, they're not a film expert, guess what? They're just gonna have a bunch of crappy AI. And it's gonna be, again, it's gonna be decent for very, very low level content. But that's it.
Yeah. I find the one realm where that tool is helpful sometimes is like for projects that are like a little bit more low budget. And like, say for example, you record at an event or something, an audio, you record like a little mini interview in a very noisy space. Sometimes the audio editing tools can actually help fix things a little bit, to make it sound a bit better without, you spending as much time on it. So it is, we're already seeing now in its early stages of how it can make things a little bit more efficient in certain kinds of projects. That way you don't have to spend as much time on working on those projects, especially if there's like an issue, as Dario mentioned, if like someone fumbled, if there was a noise, a bang or something that's in the background that you want to kind of get rid of, it is useful in that sense.
Or even on the camera, it'll be good. But I think another thing it'll also help with is probably helping to bring the costs of productions down. Because, like, think about it like this, like, excuse me, I think positions like makeup, audio ops, voiceover actors, those are going to become, like, those people are going to have a really hard time because there'll be AI tech that'll be able to take over those positions. And on their end, that sucks, but on our end, it'll bring our costs down. And then as a result, we can charge less of the clients, so they'll be more willing to maybe hire us for that project. So that could be like a indirect benefit for production companies.
It's like a two-edged sword. It's unfortunate that it's happening, but it is going to make things a little bit more efficient. I see it happening more now with the first group that is directly being affected is the voiceover artists. Yeah. Because what is it? Programs like Artlist and other websites like those are starting to integrate it. Yeah, voices.com is where you hire actual voiceover artists. But
who was talking about how I think it was on Voices, they said that now these voiceover artists are offering like AI versions of their voice, so they still get a percentage of the of the money, but it's like a lot less than if you hired them directly.
Was it? Okay.
I don't know who brought it up on this conversation or during the podcast. It might have been mentioned during a pre-interview, but
I don't remember that on an episode, but I see it right now like on Artlist, and it's being marketed like crazy on all other internet searches. You know, if your algorithm is very video production focused, I keep seeing it's like, what if your voice sounded like an old man or a nice young child or just a little bubbly girl, like you know, it's they keep changing it, you know. It's like it's still in its early stages, but like it can help. I heard someone hired a voiceover artist for a project, and the client and them were not 100% happy with it, so then they fed it into one of those AI voices, and then it spat out something even better, and then they ended up using that as the final cut for the video. I was like, wow, okay, so it's getting there now. That's the first group that's being affected directly, I think, right now.
Yeah. I just think it's really important that we really stay on top of it and understand it and learn it and not hide from it, because I would rather see all video production companies being like offering it than not like competing with it.
Yeah. Or know how to use it essentially to help deliver better results and be more efficient for clients, right?
Yeah.
And it's at a good point, right? It's at a good stage right now, because there seems to be a sort of resistance to it from production people. So if you kind of let your client know about it and educate them on it, then next time it does come up in their conversations or in their initiatives, they'll just associate you to it. So they'll think of you, they'll reach out to you directly, right? So that's another benefit of it.
And that's why I think, you know, video producers and content creators need to learn to be the go-to for AI video, right? Because it again, just to kind of compare it loosely to stock video, you know, if someone comes and says, hey, can you just make me a whole video out of stock video? It's going to be, you can say, yeah, I can do that, but that's going to be a very low quality video. Even if I'm using like amazing cinematic art grid video, what's missing? A whole bunch of stuff, right? And so it's the same thing. It's like, you know, we need to be the ones choosing to supplement it and say when and where it should be good, versus relying on someone who doesn't really know anything about film and storytelling to try to leverage AI and just make a really crappy video. But maybe they don't know, because they're like, it's AI video, maybe it's good. Right, so we're always going to be good storytellers.
We're just past the 1 hour mark, so we can start to close the conversation off. But I was just wondering, like, what's next for you and your company? We didn't really talk too much about, like, you know, how many employees you got, like, and all that stuff. But tell us a little bit about like what your vision for your company's future is.
Yeah, well, I mean, to be honest, the AI conversation is really a big focus for us right now. How do we leverage it to tell better stories, right? How do we not leverage it to how do we know when to say no? I think so. What's next for Up Media is just constantly evolving, constantly improving our processes. Our company, as I said in the very beginning in my backstory, we also offer animation. So learning to supplement AI animation, just wanting to learn how we can leverage technology to offer the best to our clients. That is the big focus, and that's what we're moving toward and excited.
You mentioned the operations. Like, what are you trying to fix on the operation side?
On the operation side?
Or maybe everything's good. I don't know. Maybe I shouldn't have used fixed.
It's all on the up and up at Up Media.
I think there's always areas to improve. I mean, I think when it comes to the operations side, areas for improvement are really like, you know, CRM and back-end organization. How can we ensure projects are moving along seamlessly? I think one of the things that we, you know, have challenges with is, you know, sometimes when we're working with larger companies, you know, they are in a hurry to get their video, but they have so much internal processes going on in a marketing campaign aside from their video that sometimes it's harder to keep the project on track. So just learning to have better communication standards with our clients, you know, using a CRM to track each stage of production better. Those kind of things just really help make the whole production more seamless and move it along quicker. And that gives us a better experience of work, and that gives the client a better end product experience as well.
Speaking of keeping your projects on track, like What do you like? You mentioned communication and everything with the client, but how do you kind of like overcome that obstacles? Because we've had that happen a couple times where like project just completely got derailed, and not in terms of like more work for us, it's just in terms of like timeline, it just got way extended past what we were expecting.
Yeah. So if you're a video agency or a video production company and you've been in business for a while, you are going to encounter clients that just put long, awkward pauses on the production. It just happens a lot. And so what you need to do is you have to have measurements in place to prevent that from happening. And even though it's out of your control, how we go about it is we actually penalize the client for it. So if the client will delay a project for a month beyond what the actual deadline for the project is, we start charging them additional. It's a small charge, but we charge them. And what happens then is that becomes a deterrent, because now they start to accrue extra cost because of their delays. And we're very upfront about it. We're very clear about it at the onset. We let them know that they're approaching the point where this might happen. And that this happened once or twice last year. And we were so good at communicating it that when the client came to us and said, hey, we understand we're like 3 months behind, just let us know what the extra cost is. Wasn't an issue, wasn't a conflict. It was just like, you know, they know that this is how we operate. So you have to deter the client from doing that. And if they are going to do that, it is a waste of your time as a video creator, because now you're just pausing things. And what clients don't understand too is that from a creativity perspective, you know, if the project is dead for like 3-4 months, you lose your creative momentum. And we're creatives, and we have the right to have that creative momentum, because that's our creative genius. And if you kill that, it's hard to pick it back up again and want to pick it back up again. So we just, you know, let the client know at the onset. We have very strict standards like, hey, you need to get back to us within 3 days with your revisions. If you decide to go on a vacation and pause the project, it's going to cost you extra.
Yeah. And like the one unfortunate thing that might happen even sometimes is when clients take forever to get back to you on something, it's like you deliver the first draft and then they don't give you feedback, say for, as an example, for like 2-3 months, then they do, you give them another draft, and then all of a sudden it's another 3 months. Like it almost becomes like you, not that you resent the project, but it's like you're not going to enjoy working on it as well. And it puts like a bad experience for us working with that client. It's like, okay, like, I mean, we created a good video, but like it's taking forever to actually get it completed, because you know you have to always be in limbo for it. So I find all the most experienced production companies like have some kind of way to deter that and to kind of like help keep projects on track. And having a small cost like that, it's like it almost becomes like a nuisance, because then also like if like a department in a company has to explain to their higher ups, it's like, oh, sorry that we had to incur that extra cost because we were slow. It's going to be almost like on them. You know, it is a good deterrent to kind of just keep everyone going on track, because you want to wrap up projects. You want to put it off to the side and then move on to the next one, where it's like, if they take forever, you're working on something and then they're like, hey, like now we need this video in the next 2 days, because that happens all the time. Yeah. And then it's like, okay, well now I'm basically splitting my focus on the current project I'm working on versus the one that took forever to get back to us, right? So we're exploring more ideas like that as well. So
no, we're not. We're not going to do that one.
Sorry. Well, girl. I said it's to learn about them. It's like to learn about them. I'm not saying we're going to do that exactly.
We don't have a similar thing. What I have in our contracts is basically if it goes past a certain amount of months, or actually I think what we have is if it goes past our deadline, and it's a client's fault, then I have an out for us if, for example, like the editor that we were using is now busy on a project, right? So now they have two options. They either got to follow that guy's timeline, or they gotta get someone else to finish it, like they gotta pay extra for that. So that's kind of like the out I've put in place, because I noticed we ran into this issue where one of the editors got too busy and now they can't handle it. So now it's like, well, they still need to get it done. And I was like, well, I'm not gonna pay for it. So I was like, how do we avoid this in the future, right? So we worked it out with that client. But going forward, I was like, okay, if this happens again, they need to be aware that if we got to put someone else on the project, it's going to be an additional cost. Because with our business, we use a lot of freelancers, especially with our editing. And that's the tricky thing with we're using freelancers, is that they'll get busy with another project. So if the client waited 3 months longer than they should have, that's a big problem, not just between you and the client, but now you and the freelancer as well, right? So I don't know if we can do the penalty. It's just because I feel like it, like, I don't know, because sometimes things happen on their end, and I don't feel comfortable doing it. But you're not the first person to bring this up. There's another company in the States that does a similar thing. But yeah, I guess it's something you can do. I guess so. It just depends on your clientele.
We have a very fair process, right? So I just checked it up. So it's 10% of the project, but we don't kick that in until they're a month overdue. So here's the deadline, right? When we hit the deadline, we say, hey, just so you know, we're over the deadline. We have 1 month to complete the project, or we're going to start charging additional, right? So we give them lots and lots of leeway. Like, we gave them a month of grace time to warn them that that extra charges are coming. And that's after the project was supposed to be completed. So for us, it works. We're just really transparent about it and honest about it. And like I said, you know, clients understand. And when the only two times that it happened, they came to us and said, just tell us how much extra it is.
Are you worried that it might like cause you to lose future business with a particular client?
No.
Okay.
I think it's, Daria, I think what you're thinking of, it's like you're thinking you might be charging this, you know, like after the fact or like a little bit later on in the process. But he was explaining that he's very honest about it up front and even early on in the process when they're starting to work with the client. It's like, hey, this is our process. This is when it needs to be done. This is what happens if we go over it. So he's very open about it. And I think if a client is going to go over in that case, it's almost like they've planned it in that case. It's like, okay, we're going to go over by 2 months, but we need that time. That cost is fine. We'll budget that in. You know, it's not like it's like a surprise charge that he's
doing. I didn't think it was a surprise charge. I was just trying to think of like, because from my point of view, it's like it's something that could cause friction between you and the client. So like, because... Again,
it
I'm more.
Only, it's a fair concern, Daria, but it only causes friction if it hits them, if they're unaware of it. If they've agreed to it and they've been informed of it, there's no surprise. They've accepted that's what's going to happen, and they understand it, and they've still been to some degree negligent of it. So it's really, I understand the concern, and like it was a bit maybe awkward for me the first time that we did that, but in order to eliminate any type of awkwardness, we were just really transparent about it. And so, and this goes into a bigger thing, which is that when we go through our contract, our terms and conditions, is we explain everything up front. Like, hey, we're not big on extra surprise charges. Like, I've had clients come to me and said, hey, our last video company said it was going to be this amount of money. Now there's all these surprise charges. Like, we don't want that. And we say, yeah, we don't want that either. So let me walk you through the project and where there could be some potential charges. So the potential additional charges that you're looking at is if you delay this project a month longer than it's supposed to be, without letting us know up front that could happen, then there's a 10%. Are you okay with that? Yep. Okay. And if you like cancel a shoot, you know, 3 days before we've agreed, that will charge you for that. Are you okay with that? Yep. So it's just kind of like letting them know that. And
Do you go through the contract with the client before they sign?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
I'm
okay.
Doing that later today.
Interesting. Okay, I never thought about that.
Yeah, I go through it because there are clauses that are really important, and I don't want to charge them extra. This is not an attempt to gouge more money out of the client. This is trying to prevent them from going off the rails. So we do have one or two triggers in our proposal or our project that will cost extra money. So it's critical that I share that to them up front so they know 100%, because it's all about transparency.
That's really smart. I never thought about doing that, because usually I'll send it to them and I'll tell them, you know, let me know what legal says, because they'll send it to the lawyers and whatever, and then I come back and say, oh, can we change this, can we change that, and then it's usually nothing major. But I never thought about going through it with them. I guess the way I would probably do it, I don't know if you do this as well, but maybe just create like a separate document outlining like the things that would be important to review, rather than just opening up the contract and going page by page, because most of it is
like a summary,
like typical, like, things, right?
Oh,
like,
yeah, it's only a summary. I don't go through every clause in
so
the
you,
contract.
Okay, you,
I just
okay,
go through like the big ones.
Got it.
Ones
got
to
it.
Know.
That
yeah.
makes sense. That
yeah.
makes sense.
And it takes like, honestly 10 minutes.
Okay,
but
so you hop
really
on a
really helpful.
You hop like on a video call and yeah. you. That's smart.
Because I don't trust them to read it. You know, they're busy. They got a million things to do, and they're gonna send it to legal anyway. They're not gonna read it. Unless I say, hey, I need 15 minutes of your time. It only takes 10 minutes. Say, look, point 3 and point 5 and point 8, let's just go through those. And I just walk them through, and now they know, and now they can't be upset about it.
Yeah, especially
smart.
If it's...
Yeah, because when I've had to come back sometimes, like there were questions about certain sections that maybe would have been easier to clarify on a call. So that's, okay, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, especially any
part of... We should do a whole other podcast on... proposals and contracts, because that's I have
this was...
like in my 11 years, man, I've had every challenge, I've had everything happen, and my contracts now are just bulletproof. Like, they handle every possible thing that can happen, and again, I'm really clear on it, and it's all about mitigating any issues and making a smooth production.
We should swap contracts after this recording, just out of curiosity.
Sure.
But speaking about proposals, though, I mean, we're going a little bit past our scheduled
this
time.
This outro is like the.
But who cares?
Like turned into a whole podcast. I love
it. Who cares? let's keep it going. We're booked them for 2 hours anyway. So, with your proposal, the thing I've always struggled with is not making them too long. Right?
Yeah.
Because I try to see it from their point of view, and it's like, if I got to flip through like a million pages, I'm going to get bored to death, right? Do you find the same thing? Like, do you try to keep yours like, you know, not too long, but not too short either?
Yeah. By the way, if you guys go over 2 hours, I'm going to charge you extra. I'm just letting you know.
Hey, that wasn't up front. That wasn't up front.
Oh, yeah, that's true. It wasn't in the contract.
It wasn't in the contract.
Yeah. Proposals. So, yes, that's a really good question. They can't be too long, but they shouldn't be too short. I think that you want to err on the side. Like, your contracts should be full, though. Again, they should really tell the whole story of who you are and what you're going to do for them. So, don't be worried about your contract being... Your proposal. Being, Don't be worried about your proposal being too long. Be more worried about it being too short. Because the shorter it is, if it's like one or two pages, it's going to look less professional. The longer it is, the more professional. So let's just say your proposal is like 20 pages, okay? If you send them a 20-page proposal, they're not going to go like, oh my God, it's so long. They're going to go, oh wow, this is like a really professional company. They've got a lot to say about their process. That means they've been around. Like, it's impressive. And it's up to the client to decide how much they want to go through it. But I am a big advocate for, like, really flesh out your proposals, because it just makes you look better. And as I said before, it shows how much of an artisan you are and how much work you're willing to put in to this client, that you're willing to put in that much work to even your proposal. And if your proposal looks amazing, the video is going to look amazing.
So you get really in depth on like you and your company in that proposal, because we kept it very minimal. Because again, I was trying to deal with not being like 30, 40 pages of stuff, right? Like, I kind of did like it's minimal style, to be honest with you. So
he was trying to bring it down. He was trying to bring it down. There was a
was
period
like 30,
where I was trying
was
to
like
keep
30,
it.
It was like 30 pages. I was
it wasn't
like,
30. This, it wasn't 30.
It was a lot. It was a lot of pages.
It was probably 15 to 20. Like
no,
Anthony
no. It was
say.
It was way more than that.
What you want to look through your proposal for and remove is redundancies. If you're saying something twice, you can take it out. But don't take out stuff that you think the client might not be interested in. Because what if they are?
Mm. do you think it might make more sense than maybe to just have like two documents, one that's more about like you and your company, and then one that focuses on the project in a way, and then in that you could have like the project details, the case studies and the quote and everything?
He's basically trying to make it longer now with two documents rather than one. I'm like, what happened to making it shorter, Dar?
I wouldn't do that because now you're giving them two documents. If you give them one and they're in, it's like if you're in a book and you're halfway through, you're not going to jump on another book. You're just going to finish it. So just like,
it's all in one place. It's more convenient. I'm like, what are you saying? Two documents. Make it harder for them, like really harder.
This is an open discussion, talking about ideas, okay?
This is so funny. But yeah, because like the one problem is if you send two documents, they might only send like a part of one to like the other people that they're trying to share it with, and it might not tell the full story. Like the one good thing is when you send one full document, it curates everything for anyone who opens it. It tells them everything they need to know, right?
Do you know what I think the issue is, Kirill, is that we're using Google Slides to create them, so we're like, we got the landscape version of stuff, and it kind of like, it's so easy to overpopulate it like quickly versus like if you do like, I don't know, something in InDesign, you can really fill it with information and it not being like 20-30 pages.
It's not about what software you're using. I think the key thing
on Google Slides, it's like you don't have a lot of real estate space to work with. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, you do. It's just a matter of how you're organizing yourself, right? It's just like the key thing is not to overstuff slides, because like the one main thing I think Anthony does really well is that he's basically organizing things in a certain way where it's like you said, Anthony, you're keeping all the information in there that is necessary for the client, but you're not also stuffing it all into one or two slides where it's not legible. The key thing is, if you take a glance at a slide, is it easy to read? Is it easy to follow? I think that's like the main thing. If it becomes too difficult for clients to follow, then it doesn't matter how short or how long it is. You know, they're going to have a hard time understanding what they're looking at. The key thing is keep it as part of the experience, almost as an extension, as you said, Anthony, of the attention to detail you put into the actual video. If you try to go and rush through the proposal, if you try to rush through trying to stuff everything into one or two slides, then they might start thinking, oh, maybe this is how they also do their videos. I don't know if I want to do this. So it's a very good point on what you're saying in terms of like, that's your first impression, because like the way you go about presenting information in a still format, like imagine they'll be thinking like, I don't know how they're going to do it in video. It may not work that well. So as long as you're not overstuffing slides with information, I think it's the best approach. That's a good rule of thumb. Then it won't feel too long.
As long as it's not redundant, as long as each slide moves to a different, covers a different point of the story.
Cool. Okay. And I guess the last thing we'll ask to kind of round things off is like, how did you come up with the name for Up Media?
When I was getting incorporated, the movie Up had just come out. And
you were a fan?
Absolutely fell in love with that movie, and I don't know, I was so inspired by it, and it just sounded like a cool, you know, it's just so cool, like UP, it's just such a simple word, so I was like, Up Media. That's it.
I love
based it off a Pixar movie.
And then, you know, now that you have the B Corp certification, you can just say everything's on the up and up, you know.
exactly.
Second company this year that had like a movie related name. We had Sammy Productions, who was like, you know, Johnny Depp's character in
Savvy,
the Pirates of the Caribbean. He was inspired.
Is that what it's called?
He was inspired by, you know, Captain Jack Sparrow saying Savvy.
Love that.
As soon as he said Jack Sparrow, I'm like, I could hear it. You know?
You can't unhear it after that. You're like, oh.
No, you can't. And I just like for the next like 5 minutes after the call, I'm just like saying to myself, Savvy.
That's funny. But all right, okay, I think this is a good spot to end it on. We might bring you back just to do like a proposal and contract focused episode.
Let's do a proposal talk, and let's bring me back in like a year to talk about AI and how it's totally revolutionized my business.
Yeah.
Yes.
He's going to be operating here virtually, you know, and no longer need to reach out to other people.
I'll send my AI to do it.
I was going to say, send the AI here. All right, guys. So if you want to find Anthony, go to upmedia.video. Yes. Okay. Sorry, I don't have my glasses on. It's upmedia.video.
Can you do that again? And I'll be like,
it's a little blind, you know.
Okay. You want to find them, go to upmedia.video. And your social media is, I forgot to open that
is
up
it the
earlier.
Same?
It's upmediagram.
Upmediagram.
Upmediagram?
Yeah, because Instagram.
On Instagram. Upmediagram.
Oh.
He wanted it to rhyme.
Oh, I thought there was a glitch in the video for a second where like it skipped like the middle of the word.
Oh.
Yeah. No, but sounds good.
Yeah, follow him on there. Add him on LinkedIn at Anthony Madani. And yeah, that's it. It was a great episode. I think it was very insightful.
Thanks, Anthony.
And I'm glad you came on.
And
I'm glad
if you're watching this, reach out if you have any questions about anything we've covered. And keep watching more of these awesome podcasts because they are amazing.
Thank you.
We appreciate that. And also, if anyone has any ideas for future topics or things they want to hear on these podcasts, do let us know in the comments so that we can start exploring some of your questions as well. So, yeah.
And I guess on that note, don't forget to like, comment, and subscribe.
Comment and subscribe, yeah. We haven't been doing that at the end of our podcast for a long time.
I don't know who makes it to the end of these. But if you guys are listening, please rate us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. So obviously do 5 stars, not less than that. Otherwise, don't do it at all. But yeah, don't forget to rate us. 5 stars minimum.
Be nice. Thanks, guys.
Anyways.
Thanks, Anthony.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Creatives Grab Coffee. Please make sure to follow and engage with us on Instagram, TikTok, LinkedIn, YouTube, and your favorite podcast app.
Creatives Grab Coffee is created by Labs Productions, a video production company based in Toronto, Canada.
Creatives Grab Coffee is also sponsored by...
My name is Miran. Welcome to Canada Film Equipment. We are a boutique rental house based in Toronto. We are here to help you guys out with all production sizes. Feel free to contact us to get a quote if you are a production house and you're looking for lighting, camera packages, or lighting and group band packages. You can see our contact information in the link below. We are more than happy to help you guys out. Make sure you follow and subscribe to creativesgrabcoffee.com. Thank you.
Hey, what's up, everybody? I'm Matt. Welcome to Audio Process. We are a boutique audio company doing location sound, sound design, post sound, ADR, Foley. We service equipment. We do all your audio needs here in Toronto. We got you covered. Come on down, audioprocess.ca. Don't forget to like, follow, subscribe, and all of the other internet things to creativesgrabcoffee.com. They'll be waiting for you. I'll be waiting for you. And we're all going to have a real good time.
Thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the next one.